Get me another beer, and my guts is spilled.
Promise. One sweetly solemn thought comes to me o'er and o'er. I am nearer home today than I ever have been before. Phoebe Carey. 21. At the end of a long day, two classes, a massive cleaning job, and a pair of massages, Abra pulled up to her cottage and just sat. She didn't want to go in. She hated knowing she didn't want to go inside her own home, tend to her own things, use her own shower. She loved Laughing Gull, and had from the first instant she'd seen it. She wanted that feeling back, the pride, the comfort, the rightness of it, and all she felt was dread. He'd spoiled it, whoever the hell he was, coming into her home, leaving his violence and death behind, a monster in the closet in the form of a gun. It left her two choices, she told herself. Let the monster win, give up, sit and brood, or fight back and fix it. But that way, she decided, there wasn't a choice at all. She shoved out of the car, muscled out her table, her bag, carted them both to the door. Inside, she leaned her table against the wall before carrying her bag into the living room. Driving nearly 20 miles up the coast to buy the smudge stick had added on to her already crowded day, but when she took it out of her bag, it felt like a positive action. She'd burn the sage, cleanse her house. If she felt her house was cleansed, it was cleansed. And once she'd reclaimed her place, she'd get serious about adding a little greenhouse so she could grow her own herbs in bigger quantities. She'd make her own damn smudge sticks and have fresh herbs year-round for cooking. Maybe she'd sell them, too. Another enterprise. Create her own potpourri and sachets. Something to think about. But for now, she did her best to clear her mind, to think only clean, positive thoughts as she lit the sage, held it over an abalone shell for safety, and blew out the flame to encourage the smoke. Her home, she thought. The floors, the ceilings, the corners belonged to her. The process, walking from room to room with the scent of white sage and lavender, calmed her, as did reminding herself what she'd made there for herself, for others. Faith, she thought, hope, and the symbols of them forged strength. Once she'd finished the house, she stepped out onto her little patio, gently waving the smudge stick to send all that hope and faith into the air, and saw Eli and the dog walking up the beach steps. It made her feel a little foolish, standing there with her smoking sage as evening settled over the beach, as the man and the happy-faced dog climbed toward her. To compensate, she stuck the smudge stick in the river rocks around her little Zen fountain, where it would burn away naturally and safely. "What a handsome couple!" Smile in place, she walked over to greet them. "And a nice surprise. I just got home a few minutes ago." "What are you doing?" "Oh." She glanced, as he did, at the smudge stick. "Just a little homey ritual. Kind of a spring cleaning." "Burning sage? That's a ward off evil spirits kind of thing."
"I think of it as more a clearing out negativity. Did your family get off all right this morning?"
"Yeah."
"Sorry I couldn't stay to see them off. Busy day for me." Something wrong, she thought, or something not quite right. All she wanted at that moment was quiet, peace, and, a rarity for her, solitude. "I still have a lot to catch up on," she continued. "Why don't I stop by in the morning before my class, get your shopping list? I can pick up what you need before I come back to do the house."
"What I need is for you to tell me why I had to hear from Mike that someone put a gun in your house, that the police were here searching. That's what I need."
"Ah, I didn't want to bring it up with your family here. I called the police," she added.
"But not me. You didn't call me or tell me."
"Eli, there wasn't anything you could do. And with a house full of people..."
"That's bullshit."
Her hackles tingled.
The comfort she'd found from the ritual struck against his anger, her own, flint against steel.
"It's not. And there was no point in me walking into Bluff House on Saturday announcing I just found a murder weapon in my incense box and had cops tromping all over my house.
There was every point in telling me, or there damn sure should have been.
Well, I don't agree. And it was my problem, my decision.
Your problem?
Insult punched through temper.
That's how it is. You can come into my place with pots of soup, massage tables, Jesus, dogs! You can walk in the middle of the night to close a fucking window and fight off an assault, but when somebody plants a gun on you, tries to implicate you in a murder, it's your problem? A murder most likely connected to me, but that's none of my business.
I didn't say that. Even to her own ears, the defense sounded weak. I didn't mean that.
What do you mean?
I didn't want to dump all this on you and your family.
You're in this because you're involved with me, and you pushed and wheedled your way in.
Pushed and wheedled! Her own insult bloomed so bright and hot, she whirled away to try to capture some of the smoke and the calm, then immediately decided she'd have needed a smudge stick the size of Whiskey Beach light to manage it.
Wheedled! Damn right you did, from the minute I came back here. Now you're in, and you don't want to dump? You don't give anybody else a chance to dump. You're there with the shovel before the first clod hits the ground. But when it falls on you, you don't trust me enough to help.
God, God, it isn't about trust. It's about timing.
If that were true, you'd have found the time to tell me. You found it to tell Maureen.
She was...
Instead of finding the time, you're up here lighting sage on fire and waving around a smoking stick.
Don't make fun of my process.
I don't care if you burn a field of sage or sacrifice a chicken. I care you didn't tell me you were in trouble.
I'm not in trouble. The police know it wasn't my gun. I called Vinny the minute I found it.
But not me.
No.
She sighed, wondering how trying to do the right thing could go so horribly wrong.
I didn't.
My family left this morning, but you didn't tell me. You weren't going to tell me now.
I needed to wave my smoking stick around and get comfortable in my house again. It's getting cold. I want to go in.
Fine. Go in and pack a bag.
Eli, I just want to be alone and quiet.
You can be alone and quiet at Bluff House. It's a big place. You're not staying here by yourself until this whole goddamn mess is over.
This is my house!
Her eyes stung, and she wished she could blame it on the thinning, sluggish smoke. I'm not letting some bastard drive me out of my house. Then we'll bunk here.
I don't want you to bunk here.
If you don't want us in, we'll stay out here. But we stay.
Oh, for God's sake.
She turned on her heel, strode back inside. She said nothing when he, with a slightly hesitant Barbie, followed her in. Instead, she went straight into the kitchen, poured herself a glass from an uncorked bottle of Shiraz.
I know how to take care of myself.
No question. You know how to take care of yourself and everybody else. You don't know how, apparently, to let someone take care of you. That's conceit. She slapped the glass on the counter.
It's independence and capability.
To a point it is. Then it tips over into conceit and stubborn. You've tipped.
This wasn't like you had a leaky pipe, so you grabbed a wrench or called a plumber instead of the guy you're sleeping with.
Add the guy you're sleeping with is involved with this whole clusterfuck. And he's a lawyer!
I called a lawyer,
she said, then immediately wished she hadn't. Great! Good. Eli shoved his hands in his pockets, paced a couple of circles. So you talk to the cops, a lawyer, your neighbors, anybody else other than me, of course. She shook her head.
I didn't want to spoil your family's visit. It seemed pointless for you or any of you to worry.
You were worried?
I needed to. Yes, all right. Yes, I've been worried.
I need you to tell me everything that happened, in detail. I need you to tell me what you said to the police, what they said to you, everything you can remember.
Because you're a lawyer.
The long, quiet look he sent her accomplished what words didn't. It made her feel foolish. It made her feel wrong. Because we're involved. His tone, quiet as the look, finished the job. Because this started with me, or with Bluff House, or both. And because I'm a lawyer.
All right. I'll pack first.
When he lifted his eyebrows, she shrugged.
It's too cold for you to sleep outside. And I know he's got no reason to come back here again. He has reasons to break into Bluff House again, or it feels like it. So I'll pack some things and go with you.
Compromise? He wondered. Isn't this what his grandmother had spoken of? That give and take on both sides to find a balance.
Good.
When she walked away, he picked up her unfinished wine.
We won that battle, he told Barbie. But I don't think we've won the war. Yet.
He let her have quiet on the drive down, and stayed downstairs when she went up to unpack. If she put her things in another bedroom, he'd deal with it later. For now, it was enough to know she was with him, and safe. In the kitchen, he poked in the fridge, the freezer. Leftover ham, he calculated, and plenty of sides. Even he should be able to put a decent enough meal together. By the time she came down, he had the Monday night hodgepodge meal set up in the breakfast area. You can fill me in while we eat.
All right,
she sat, oddly comforted when Barbie elected to curl up by her feet instead of Eli's.
I'm sorry I made you feel I didn't trust you. That wasn't it.
It's part of it, but we'll get into that later. Tell me exactly what happened, step by step. His response only dampened her already soggy mood.
I wanted to meditate,
she began, and told him everything in as precise a manner as she could. You never touched the gun?
No. It fell when I dropped the box and I left it there.
As far as you know, they didn't find any prints that shouldn't have been there?
No, just the fibers.
And the police haven't contacted you since?
Vinny called me today just to check in. He said they should have the ballistic results tomorrow or Wednesday, but more likely Wednesday.
What about the gun itself? Was it registered?
He didn't tell me. I think he has to be careful what he says to me. But they know it wasn't mine. I've never owned a gun. I've never even held a gun. And if it was the gun used to kill Kirby Duncan, they know I was here. With you.
Handily covering each other, Eli thought. Just what would Wolf make of that?
What did your lawyer say?
To call them if they wanted to question me again, and that he'd contact Detective Corbett directly. I'm not worried about being a murder suspect. Nobody thinks I killed Duncan.
I could have planted the gun in your place.
That would be stupid, which you're not.
I could be using you for sex and patsy potential.
For the first time in what felt like hours, she smiled.
No more sex if you make me your patsy. And that's just not logical, as it only turns the light back on, makes them look at you again, which is exactly what whoever did plant it wanted, and why they suddenly made that anonymous call to Wolf. The fact is, really, all of this reeks of setup, and Corbett's not an idiot.
No, I don't think he is. But there's another angle. It's possible you've had contact with the killer 3 times now. Here, in the bar, and now with him planting the gun at your cottage. That's something to worry about, and you know it. You're not an idiot either.
I can't do anything about that, but be careful.
You could leave. Go visit your mother for a while.
You won't, he added before she could speak. And I don't blame you, but it's an option.
Another option is to trust me.
Hearing him say it, knowing she'd given him cause to say it, made her absolutely miserable.
Eli, I do trust you.
Not where it gets sticky, you don't. I don't know if I blame you for that either. Men have let you down. Your father. It's one thing for it not to work out between him and your mother, but he's still your father, and he chose not to be one, not to be a real part of your life. He let you down.
I don't dwell on it.
That's healthy of you, but it's there.
When he let that hang in the air, she admitted defeat.
Yes, it's there. I don't really matter to him, and never have. I don't dwell on it, but it is there.
You don't dwell because it's unproductive, and you like to produce.
Interesting way to put it.
Her lips curved again.
And true.
And you don't dwell because you know it's his loss.
Then there's the bastard who hurt you.
That's letting you down big time. You cared about him. Trusted him, let him in, then he turned on you. He violated you.
As bad as that was, if it hadn't happened, I might not be here.
positive attitude. Kudos. But it happened. You gave someone your trust and they broke it. Why wouldn't it happen again?
I don't think that way. I don't live that way.
You lead an open, energetic, satisfying life that I often find amazing. The kind that takes spine and heart. It's admirable. You don't lean easily, and that's admirable too. Until it gets to the point where you could lean. Where you should and you won't.
I would have told you if your family hadn't been here.
Then she accepted and told the whole truth.
I probably would have put it off for a while. I might have told myself you keep getting hammered, and there was no point adding to that until I knew more, or it had been resolved in some way. I might have, but that's not about trust.
Pity?
Concern, and my own confidence. I don't like the word conceit. I needed to take care of myself. Make decisions, handle problems, and yes, maybe take on other people's problems to build up the confidence Derek shattered. I need to know I can take care of things when there's no one to depend on but myself.
And when there is someone else to depend on? Maybe he was right again, and that was where it got sticky. And maybe it was time for a little self-evaluation.
I don't know, Eli. I just don't know the answer, because I haven't given myself that choice in a long time. And still, I leaned on you that night, after I was attacked. I leaned, and you didn't let me down.
I can't get involved again with someone who won't give as much as she takes, take as much as she gives. I've found out the hard way. If you do, you end up empty-handed and bitter. I guess we both have to decide how much we can give, how much we can take.
I hurt you because I didn't reach out.
Yeah, you did. And you pissed me off. And you made me think. He rose, picking up dishes. Neither of them had done justice to the meal. I let Lindsay down.
No, Eli.
Yeah, I did. Our marriage might have been a mistake, but we were in it together. Neither of us got what we wanted or expected out of it. At the end, I couldn't stop what happened to her. I still don't know if she's dead because of some choice I made, choices we made together, or just some random piece of bad luck. I let my grandmother down, going longer and longer between times coming here, or seeing her at all. She didn't deserve that. We almost lost her, too. Would it have happened if I'd spent more time here? I came here to stay with her after Lindsay's murder.
You're the center of the universe now.
You want to talk conceit? No, but I know I'm somewhere in the center of this, and all of it's connected. He turned to her, didn't go to her, didn't touch her, but stood with that space between them. I'm telling you, Abra, I'm not going to let you down. I'm going to do everything, whether you like it or not, whether you sleep with me or not. To make sure nothing happens to you. And when this is done, I guess we'll see where we are and where we go from there. Because she felt a little boxed in, she rose.
I'll do the dishes.
I've got it.
Balance, or as you said, give and take,
she reminded him.
You fix the meal, I clean up.
Okay. I want a copy of your schedule. She felt literally prickles of warning at the back of her neck.
Eli, it changes. That's the beauty of it.
I want to know where you are when you're not here. I'm not a goddamn stalker. It's not about keeping tabs or trying to sew you in. She put the plate she was holding on the counter, took a breath.
I want to say I didn't think that or mean that. And I also realize something I didn't until today, until all this. I realize I brought more baggage with me from D.C. than I thought. I think, hope, it's down to a small hand tote. I hope I'll figure out how to toss that out.
It takes time.
I thought I'd finished the time, but apparently not quite. So,
she lifted the plate again, slid it into the dishwasher rack.
I'm here most of the day. I have my morning class, church basement, and I have a massage at 4:30, Greta Parish.
Okay.
Thanks.
She finished loading the dishwasher, began to wipe off the counters.
You haven't touched me, not once since you came up the steps to my cottage. Why is that? Because you're mad?
Maybe some, but mostly because I don't know how you feel about it. Her eyes met his, held.
How do I know how I feel about you touching me if you don't?
He brushed a hand down her arm first, then turned her toward him, drew her in. She dropped the rag on the counter, locked her arms around him.
I'm sorry. I was holding things back, holding things in, but, oh God, Eli, he was in my house. He went through my things. He touched my things. Derek went through my things. He touched my things, broke things while he waited for me to come home.
He won't hurt you. Eli pressed his lips to her temple. I won't let him hurt you.
I have to get past it. I have to.
You will. But not alone, not without him.
When she left the next morning, he told himself not to worry. Not only was the church less than 2 miles away, but he couldn't think of a single reason for anyone to harm her. She'd be back by mid-morning, and once he knew she was safely in the house, he could work. With his mind too busy to slide into the story, he went down to the basement, spent nearly an hour unloading the shelves, walking them back. It took more time to open the panel from the basement side, and once he had, he decided to oil the hinges. The creak added interesting atmosphere, but should he want to surprise anyone, silence served. Armed with a flashlight and a box of light bulbs, he worked his way through the passage, testing each light, moving on, until he'd reached the third floor. Once he'd oiled those hinges, he considered, then angled a chair in front of the panel. Checked to make sure he could open and close it again, then backtracked. He repositioned the shelves, again tested so he could easily move around them, in or out of the panel, then he reloaded them. Camouflage, he thought, should he want or need it? Trap set, or nearly. All he needed was the hook and the bait. Since working in the passages transferred dust, grime, he changed, washed up, then spent some time checking out video cameras and nanny cams on the internet. He was pouring himself his first Mountain Dew of the day when Abra came in with her market bags.
Hi!
She dumped the bags, reached into one.
Look what I got you!
She turned to Barbie with a big rawhide bone.
This is for a good dog. Have you been a good dog?
Barbie slapped her butt to the ground.
I thought so. Have you been a good boy?
She asked Eli as she unsealed the bone.
Do I have to sit on the floor?
I got makings for my lasagna, which is legendary, and for tiramisu.
You can make tiramisu?
We're gonna find out. I've decided to have a good feeling about today. And a good part of the reason, is balance. Or knowing we're working on finding a balance. Another?
Now she wrapped her arms around Eli for a squeeze.
I found out you don't hold grudges.
I can hold grudges with the best of them,
he countered, but not against somebody I care about.
Grudges are negative energy turned inward, so I like knowing you can let go. And, speaking of negative energy, I stopped by my cottage, and it felt better. Not all the way back, but it felt better.
Due to a smelly smoking stick?
She drilled a finger in his belly.
It worked for me.
I'm glad, and sincerely hope you're not thinking we need a couple of cases of smelly smoking sticks to offset the negative energy in Bluff House.
It couldn't hurt, but we can talk about that later.
Much, much later, he also sincerely hoped.
Are you going to work now? I'll just strip the bed and grab the laundry, then I'll stay out of your way until you break.
Fine, but I want to show you something first.
Sure, what?
Up. He jerked a thumb at the ceiling before taking her hand. You missed a spot.
I did not.
Automatically insulted, she picked up her pace as they went upstairs.
A really big spot, he added. Up.
Third level? I only do that once a month, just vacuum and dust. If you wanted it back in use, you should have...
Not that. Not exactly.
I'm thinking about moving my office up there, though into the south gable.
Eli, that's a fabulous idea.
Yeah, I'm playing with it. Great light, great view from there. Really quiet.
Too bad I don't paint or sculpt, because the old servants' hall would be a hell of a studio.
I thought the same. One of the beach-facing bedrooms would be a wonderful little library, like for your reference books, a kind of library sitting room when you wanted to take a break but not actually stop work.
He hadn't thought that far, but maybe.
I could help you set it up if you decide to do it. Oh, these wonderful ceilings. So much potential. And I've always thought it was a shame not to use the whole house. Esther told me she used it years ago to paint, but found she worked better in her own sitting room, and best of all outside. It'd be hard on her to do two flights of stairs in any case.
The whole house is exactly what I'm thinking of using again. He walked over, opened the panel.
Oh, my God, this is fabulous! Just look at this!
She dashed over to do just that.
This is so utterly cool!
The lights work, he demonstrated. Now, and it goes all the way to the basement. I moved the shelves out so the panel works down there.
I would have played Princess Warrior in these as a kid.
Really? And he found he could picture it perfectly. See? You missed a big spot.
I'll get on that, if you make sure any spider's bigger than a housefly are dispatched first. You should open up all the panels.
I'm thinking about it.
To think of all the times I've cleaned in here and never realized this existed. It's... He doesn't know about this.
Eyes alight, she looked at Eli.
He doesn't know.
I don't think so. He sure as hell hasn't used it. It took Mike and I and a lot of sweat to move that armoire. And it took me over an hour working alone to move the shelves out far enough to get through.
Laying an ambush? Eli.
I'm thinking about that, too.
Proactive instead of defensive.
Hands fisted on her hips, she strode around the room.
I knew this was going to be a good day. We can't do something. We could catch him in the act.
I'm thinking about it. It's not as simple as jumping out and saying boo. If the simplest explanation is also true, he's not just an intruder. He's a murderer. We don't just jump into this.
We plan,
she agreed.
I think creatively when I clean, so I'll get started and we'll both think.
And we wait to hear from the cops.
Oh, yeah.
She deflated a little.
I guess we do. Maybe they'll trace the gun and this'll all be done. It would be better that way. Not as exciting, but realistically, better is better.
Whatever happens, I won't let you down.
Eli.
She took his face in her hands.
Let's make a new pact. And promise not to let each other down.
That's a deal. 22. He had to work. He let plots and plans for proactive ambushes cook in the back of his brain, but he had to get the story out, get those words on paper. He hadn't heard from his agent about what he'd sent her, but the holiday weekend bogged things down. And, he reminded himself, it wasn't as if he was her only client. He wasn't even an important client. Better to keep riding the wave of the story, and he'd have more to send in. If she had problems with what he'd already done, he'd deal with it. He could go back, polish up another 5 chapters, send it off to give his agent a bigger part of the whole, but the story was running hot for him, and he didn't want to risk dousing it. He didn't break until well into the afternoon, when Barbie pulled him out of the zone by sitting at his knee, staring at him. Her signal, he'd already learned, for,
"Sorry to bother you, but I've got to go."
Okay, one second. He backed up, saved, and realized he felt a little buzzed, as if he'd downed a couple of excellent glasses of wine in rapid succession. The minute he stood, Barbie scrambled out of the room. He heard her running down the steps at warp speed. She'd sit, quivering, in the kitchen, he knew, waiting for him and the leash. He called out absently to Abra as he moved toward the kitchen, and found the dog exactly where he'd expected. He also found an artful club sandwich under clear wrap, topped by a Post-it on the counter.
"Have some lunch after you walk Barbie. XXOO, Abra."
"She never misses," he murmured. He took the dog out, enjoyed the break nearly as much as Barbie, even when it began spitting chilly rain. With his hair damp, his dog soaked, and his mind sliding back toward the book, he answered the phone in his pocket on his way up the beach steps.
Mr. Landon, this is Sherilyn Burke, Burke Massey Investigations.
Yeah. His guts tightened a little, anticipation and dread. It's good to hear from you.
I have a report for you. I could email it, but I'd like to go over it with you in person. I can come out to you tomorrow if that's convenient.
Is there something I should worry about?
Worry? No. I like the face-to-face, Mr. Landon, where we can both ask and answer. I can be there about 11.
Brisk, he thought. Professional. And firm. Okay. Why don't you send me the report in the meantime? Then I'll be up to date when we ask and answer.
Good enough.
You know how to get to Whiskey Beach?
Had a nice weekend there several years ago. And if you've been to Whiskey Beach, you know Bluff House. I'll find you. 11 o'clock.
I'll be here. Nothing to worry about, he thought, as he took Barbie inside. But of course, everything about Lindsay's murder, the police investigation, his own position, worried him. But he wanted those answers, needed them. He took his iPad and his lunch into the library. Abra would be running the vacuum or something upstairs, he assumed, and the rain made him want a fire. He lit one, then sat down with his tablet. He'd read the report while he ate. Ignoring other email for now, he downloaded the attachment from his investigator. She'd personally re-interviewed friends, neighbors, co-workers, both his and Lindsay's, and re-interviewed Justin and Eden Susskind, as well as some of their neighbors' co-workers. She'd talked to Wolf and had cornered one of the assistant prosecutors. She'd walked the crime scene, though it had long since been cleared and cleaned, and was even now staged for sale. She'd done her own reenactment of Lindsay's murder. Thorough, he thought. He read her summaries, which included impressions. The Susskinds had recently separated. Not surprising, he mused, considering the strain a cheating spouse put on a marriage. Add murder and a barrage of media that had made their marriage fodder for the masses. More surprising, he supposed, they'd stuck for nearly a year. 2 kids, though, he recalled. Too bad. She'd spoken with desk clerks, bellmen, housekeeping at hotels and resorts that coincided with Lindsay's travel, and confirmed what he'd already known. Much of that travel had been in the company of Justin Susskind during the last 10 or 11 months of her life. How did he feel about that? He asked himself. Not much, not any more. The anger was done, finished. Even the sense of betrayal had dulled, like stone washed by water, those sharp edges had smoothed away. He felt sorry. Given the time, the process, he imagined the anger, the bitterness both he and Lindsay had felt, would have burned itself out. They'd have gone their separate ways. They'd have moved on. But neither of them had the chance. Whoever killed her had seen to that. He owed it to them both to read the reports, meet the investigator, to do everything he could to find out why, who, then put it away. He read the report twice, thought it over as he sampled the smoothie he'd found in the fridge with its "Drink Me" post-it. He decided to shift gears, got his notebook from the desk and yet another book on Esmeralda's dowry from the shelves. He spent the next hour winding along the author's speculative path. This one leaned heavily on the theory that the surviving seaman and the privileged daughter of the house, Violetta, had fallen in love. Her brother, Edwin, upon discovering them, had killed the lover. Violetta, reckless, wild, ran off to Boston, never to return, and Esmeralda's dowry remained lost to the ages. What Eli knew of family history confirmed Violetta had run off, been disowned and all but erased from any documents through the wealth, influence, and fury of her family for the disgrace. The matter-of-fact tone used to depict the events might not have been as entertaining as others he'd read in the last weeks, but seemed more based in sense. Maybe it was time to hire a skilled genealogist to do whatever could be done to track down the reckless Violetta Landon. Considering it, Eli pulled out his phone again when it signaled. He saw his agent's name on the display, took one long, deep inhale. "Here we go," he thought, and answered. He sat there with his notebook, his tablet, his phone, when Abra walked in.
"I'm down upstairs," she began. "You're clear if you want to go back to work. I've got one more load of laundry in the dryer. I thought I'd get back into the passageway." It's taking some time, as I have to haul buckets in and out to get the steps really clean. And I thought if I did it naked, it would be more fun.
The what?
Ah, as I thought, the naked got through the wall. Are you working here, researching?
She asked, tipping her head to read the title of the book he'd set down. Whiskey Beach, A Legacy of Mystery and Madness.
Really?
It's mostly crap, but it has a few pertinent details. It's got a section on the area and the Landons during Prohibition that's pretty interesting. My great-great-grandmother helped run the product to local establishments, hiding the bottles under her skirt to elude authorities. Who wouldn't ask her to lift them?
Clever.
I've heard that one before, so it may be true. The theory on the dowry is the rescued seaman managed to hide it. Then he stole the fair and headstrong Violetta's heart and several pieces of her jewelry. That concluded in a wild chase on a stormy night where he went off the lighthouse cliff, courtesy of Edwin Landon, her dark-hearted brother. The dowry likely went with him back into the unforgiving sea.
Where it's secured in Davy Jones's locker?
According to this guy, the brigand and the treasure chest were dashed on the rocks, scattering the jewels like sparkling starfish. Or maybe it was jellyfish. Anyway.
If that were true, I'd still think bits and pieces, at least, would have been recovered. You'd hear about that over the years.
Not if people who snagged a shiny necklace or whatever kept their mouths shut, which he speculates, and seems very likely. Anyway, he said again. Abra gave him a curious smile.
Anyway?
She liked it.
Who? The headstrong Violetta?
Who? No. My agent. My book. The chapters I sent her. She liked it. Or she's lying to spare my feelings.
Would she lie?
No, she liked it. Abra sat on the coffee table to face him.
Did you think she wouldn't?
I wasn't sure.
Now you are.
She thinks she can sell it on the 5 chapters.
Eli, that's great!
But she thinks she can make a bigger splash with the whole book.
How close are you?
Nearly finished the first draft. Another couple of weeks there, maybe. Less, he thought, if it kept rolling as it had been. Then I need to tighten it up. I don't know exactly.
It's an important and very personal decision, but... Oh, Eli, you should go for the splash.
He had to grin at the way she bounced on the table. Yeah, well, that's what she thinks.
What about you?
The splash. I'd feel easier about having it done before she sends it out. She could be wrong and I'll rack up the new world record for rejections, but I'd have finished it. She bumped her knee to his.
She could be right and you'll have sold your first novel. Don't make me get a smudge stick to banish negative thoughts and energy.
Can we just have sex instead? He grinned at her. I'm always pretty positive about sex.
I'll consider it. When are you going to let me read it?
When he shrugged, she rolled her eyes.
Okay. Let's go back to the previous request of some time ago. One scene. Just one scene.
Yeah, maybe. One scene.
Yay! You know, we should celebrate.
Didn't I just suggest sex? Laughing, she slapped his leg.
There are other ways to celebrate.
In that case, we can celebrate when I finished it.
Fair enough. I'm heading back to the dungeons.
I can give you a hand.
You could, or you could go back to work.
She lifted her joined palms, arrowed them down like a diver toward the water.
Poised for the splash.
He smiled at her. I should probably try for another couple hours. I'm going to lose time tomorrow. The investigator I hired is coming up to meet with me.
News?
She asked, sitting again. I don't know. I read her report. Not much new, but she covered a lot of ground. The suskind separated.
It's difficult to overcome infidelity, especially when it's so public. They have kids, don't they?
Yeah, 2.
Even more difficult.
She hesitated, shook her head.
And, so I don't repeat a mistake, I need to tell you Vinny got in touch a couple hours ago. The bullets they recovered from Duncan's body were fired by the gun I found in my cottage.
He put a hand over hers. I would have been surprised if they didn't match.
I know. The fact that I called Vinny when I found it weighs on my side. And the anonymous tip to Wolf from a disposable cell phone, that seems sticky. But he wanted me to know that Wolf's digging into my background, my movements,
trying to put you and me together before Lindsay's murder.
We weren't, so he can't.
No, he can't.
Relay all this to your lawyer.
I did. He's on it. There's nothing, Eli, and I think Wolf only cares about me as a conduit to you. If he somehow links us to Duncan's death, it's more feasible you were involved in Lindsay's.
It goes both ways, he reminded her. Since we're clear on Duncan, it adds weight to me being clear on Lindsay's.
Then you agree with him on the basics. The two murders are connected somehow.
I can't believe I'm this close to two murders. A near-fatal accident, a series of break-ins, and an assault without there being connections.
I'm with you on that, but then everything's connected under it all.
She rose again.
I'm going back to it, so maybe we can figure out a way to be the hero and heroine of our own novel and help catch a bad guy.
We should go out to dinner tonight. Her eyebrows quirked.
We should?
Yeah, Barbie can guard the house. We should go out, have a nice dinner somewhere. You can wear something sexy.
Are we having a date, Eli?
I've let that slide. Pick a place, he told her. We'll go on a date.
All right, I will.
She came back to lean down, kiss him.
You'll have to wear one of your many ties.
I can do that. Good news. Uneasy news, he thought when she left him. Questions to be asked and answered. But tonight, he was going out with a fascinating woman who made him think, who made him feel. I'm going back to work for a bit, he told Barbie. Then you can help me pick out a tie. He couldn't watch the house every hour of every day, but he continued to spot check. He knew he could get back inside again, even if Landon had changed the code again. He'd prefer to continue his search with the house empty, but the way Landon stuck to the place, he might have to risk going in when Landon was sleeping. He'd begun to believe he'd gone in the wrong direction with the basement, at least that section of the mammoth space. But he had to finish to be sure. He'd spent so much time, so much sweat, so much money that he had to see it through. He needed to get up to the third floor again, somewhere in one of the trunks under some cushion. Behind some picture, he'd find a clue, a diary, a map, coordinates. He'd been through the library and bluff house while the old lady slept, but he'd found nothing of importance. He'd found nothing to match his own knowledge, his own meticulous and detailed research into Esmeralda's dowry. He knew the truth. Beyond the legend, beyond the adventure stories written about that storm-tossed night on Whiskey Beach, he knew. The wind, the rocks, the raging sea, and only one man survived. One man, he thought, and a treasure beyond price. Pirate booty, taken by might, by courage, by blood. And his by right, his by blood, the blood he shared with Nathaniel Broom. He was descended from Broom, who'd claimed the treasure, and from Violetta Landon, who'd given the pirate her heart, her body, and a son. He had proof, written in Violetta's hand. He often thought her message from the grave had been written directly to him, to give him the bits and pieces from letters, from a single diary, all discovered after the death of his great uncle. A stupid, careless man. He was the heir now to that treasure. Who had more right to the spoils than he? Not Eli Landon. He would have what was his. He'd kill if need be. He had killed. And now that he had, he knew he could do so again. He knew, as the days passed and his way to Bluff House barred, he knew he'd kill Eli Landon before it was over, before it truly could be over. After he'd reclaimed what was his, he'd kill Landon as Landon had killed Lindsay. That was justice, he told himself. Rough justice, and the kind the Landons deserved. The kind Nathaniel Broom would have approved of. His heart jumped when he saw them come out of the house, Landon in a suit, the woman in a short red dress, holding hands, laughing into each other's faces. Not a care in the world. Had he been fucking her while he'd been with Lindsay?
Self-righteous prick. He deserved to die. He wished he could do it. Do both of them. Right now.
But he had to be patient. He needed to regain his legacy. Then he'd mete out justice. He watched them get in the car, could see the woman lean over for a kiss before Landon drove out, away.
2 hours, he estimated. If he could have afforded to have them followed as before, he'd know more precisely. But he could risk 2 hours inside. He'd paid a great deal for the alarm breaker, and money would become a serious issue soon. An investment, he reminded himself as he parked his car, lifted his bag out of the trunk. He knew the police patrolled. He'd watched them cruise by Bluff House, believed he had the basic timing. He thought he would have made a good pirate himself, and considered his aptitude further proof of his blood, his rights. He knew how to evade, how to plan, how to take what he wanted. The gloomy rain made good cover. He hurried through it, aiming for the side door, the easiest entry point, the most sheltered. He'd take time to make a wax impression of the woman's key. She wouldn't have taken that heavy ring she carried, not dressed for the evening. He'd find it, copy it, and next time he'd simply use a key to get in. But now he took his jimmy out of his bag and hooked the alarm reader around his neck by the strap for easy access. Even as he stepped to the door, the wild warning barks erupted from inside. He stumbled back, heart racing into his throat. He'd seen Landon with a dog on the beach, but it had seemed friendly, playful, harmless, the sort of dog you trusted with your kids. He'd put a couple of dog biscuits in his bag as a bribe. The violence of the barking didn't speak of the easily bribed. It spoke of vicious teeth, snapping jaws. Cursing, near to tears, he backed away. Next time, the next time he'd bring meat. Poisoned. Nothing would keep him out of Bluff House and away from what was rightfully his. He needed to calm down, and he needed to think. It infuriated him most of all that he needed to go back to work. At least for a few days, but that would give him time to think, and to plan. Maybe come up with a new idea to implicate Landon or the woman, to get one or both of them out of the house, into police custody for a time. Enough time. Or maybe one of the Boston Landons would have an accident. That would draw the bastard out of the house, clear the road. Something to think about. Now he needed to get back to Boston himself and regroup, put in appearances, make sure he was seen where he was supposed to be seen, make sure he talked to those he was supposed to talk to. Everyone would see an ordinary man going about his work, his day, his life. No one would see how extraordinary he was. He'd rushed it, he thought now as he checked his speed, made sure he stayed within the posted limit. Knowing he was close had driven him too fast. He'd throttle back a bit, give everything and everyone time to settle. When he came back to Whiskey Beach, he'd be ready to move, ready to win. He'd claim his legacy. He'd dispense justice. Then he'd live as he deserved to, like a pirate king. He drove carefully by the beachfront restaurant where Eli and Abra held hands across the table.
"I like dating," Abra commented. "I'd almost forgotten."
"Me too."
"I like first dates."
She picked up her wine, smiled over the glass.
"Especially first dates where I don't have to decide if I'm going to let myself be talked into bed."
"I really like the last part of that."
"You're home. You're home in Whiskey Beach. It shows, and I know how it feels. Tell me your plans for Bluff House. You have them,"
she added, taking a finger off the stem of the glass to point at him.
"You're a plan maker."
"I used to be. For a while. For too long, just getting through the day was too much of a plan. But you're right. I've been thinking about plans for the house." She edged forward, candlelight in her eyes, the roll of the sea through the wide glass beside them.
"Tell me all."
"Practicalities first. Gran needs to come back. She'll stay in Boston and work on her therapy until she's ready. Then she'll come home. I was thinking of an elevator. I know an architect who'd come out, take a look. There's going to be a time when she can't handle the stairs, so maybe an elevator's an option. If not, eventually we could see about turning the smaller parlor into a bedroom suite for her.
I like the elevator. She loves her bedroom and loves being able to go all over the house. It would help her have all that. I think it's years off, but it's good planning. What else?
Update that old generator. Do something with the basement. I haven't figured that out yet. Not a priority. The third floor is more intriguing.
New office space for the novelist.
He grinned, shook his head. First on the list with the elevator. I want to have parties in Bluff House again.
Parties?
I used to like them. Friends, family, good food, music. I want to see if I still like them. The idea made her almost giddy.
Let's plan one. A big one for when you sell your book.
That's an if.
I'm an optimist, so it's when.
He shifted when the waiter served their salads, waiting until they were alone again. Superstitious or not, he didn't want to plan a party around the book he'd yet to finish, much less sell. Compromise, he thought. Why don't we have a welcome home party when Gran comes back?
That's perfect!
She gave his hand a squeeze before she picked up her fork.
She'd love it. I know a great swing band.
Swing?
It'll be fun, a little retro. Women in pretty dresses, men in summer suits, because I know she'll be back before the end of summer. Chinese lanterns on the terraces, champagne, martinis, flowers everywhere, silver trays full of pretty food on white tables.
You're hired, she laughed.
I do some party planning here and there.
Why am I not surprised? She tapped the air with her fork.
I know people who know people.
I bet. What about you and plans? Your yoga studio?
It's on the slate.
I could back you. She inched away, just a little.
I like backing myself.
No investors allowed?
Not yet, anyway. I'd like a good space. Comfortable, serene, good light, a mirrored wall, maybe a pretty little fountain. A good sound system, the way the one at the church is absolutely not. Lighting I could dim. Color-coordinated yoga mats, blankets, blocks, that sort of thing. Eventually establish enough to take on a couple other instructors, but nothing too big. And a little treatment room for massages. But for now, I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
Which is everything.
Everything I like. Aren't we lucky?
I'm feeling pretty lucky at the moment.
I meant that we're both doing what we like. We're sitting here on our first date, which I like, talking about plans for doing other things we like. It makes having to do things you don't like no big deal.
What don't you like? She smiled at him.
Right now? Right here? I can't think of a thing.
Later, curled up warm and loose against him, slipping dreamily toward sleep, she realized she liked everything about being with him, and when she thought of tomorrow, she thought of him. She understood as she drifted with the sea sighing outside. If she let herself slip just a little more, she would love. She could only hope she was ready. 23. From the name, Sherilyn Burke, and the voice over the phone, Brisk Yankee, Eli pictured a lanky blonde in a smart suit. He opened the door to a 40-ish brunette in jeans, a black sweater, and a battered leather jacket. She carried a briefcase and wore black chucks.
Mr. Landon?
Miss Burke. She pushed a pair of Wayfarers on top of her short cap of hair, held out a hand to shake his.
Nice dog,
she added, and held out a hand to Barbie. Barbie politely shook.
She's got a hell of a bark, but doesn't appear to have much bite.
The bark does the job.
I bet. Some house you've got here.
It really is. Come on in. Can I get you some coffee?
I never turn it down. Black's good.
Why don't you go in, sit down. I'll get it.
Maybe we could save time, and I'll go to the kitchen with you. You answer the door, you're getting the coffee. That tells me it's the staff's day off.
I don't have staff, which you already know.
Part of the job. And, full disclosure,
she added with a smile that showed off a crooked incisor.
I wouldn't mind a look around. I've seen some magazine spreads.
she added.
But it's not like being in it.
All right. She studied the foyer as they walked on, then the main parlor, the music room with its double pocket doors that could open to the parlor for parties.
It goes on and on, doesn't it? But in a livable way instead of a museum, I've wondered. You've kept the character, and that says something. Inside matches the out.
Bluff House is important to my grandmother.
And to you?
Yeah, and to me.
It's a big house for one person. Your grandmother lived here alone for the last several years.
That's right. She'll come back when her doctors clear it. I'll stay with her.
Family first. I know how it is. I've got two kids, a mother who drives me crazy, and a father who drives her crazy since he retired. He put in his 30.
Your father was a cop?
Yep, he was one of the boys, but you knew that.
Part of the job. She smirked, then turned into and around the kitchen.
This isn't part of the original, but it still manages to reflect the character. Do you cook?
Not really.
Me either. This kitchen looks like one for serious cooking.
My grandmother likes to bake. He moved to the coffee maker as she made herself at home on an island stool. And the woman who takes care of the house is a pretty serious cook, I'd say.
That would be Abra Walsh. She's, taking care of the house for you now?
That's right. Is my personal life relevant, Ms. Burke?
Make it, Sherilyn. And everything's relevant. It's how I work. So I appreciate getting a sense of the house. I'm also an admirer of Ms. Walsh's mother. And from what I've learned, I've got some for the daughter. She's making an interesting life herself here, after some hard knocks. How about you?
Working on it.
You were a decent lawyer of your kind.
She added that quick smile again.
Trying to be a writer now?
That's right.
Your name would make a splash. Old money, scandal, mystery.
Resentment curdled inside his belly like sour milk. I'm not looking to make a splash off my family's money or my wife's murder. She shrugged.
It is what it is, Mr. Landon.
Make it Eli, if you're going to insult me.
Just getting a gauge. You cooperated with the police more than I'd have expected after your wife's murder.
More than I should have, in hindsight. He set her coffee in front of her. I wasn't thinking like a lawyer. By the time I did start thinking, it was a little late.
Did you love her?
He'd asked for a woman, he reminded himself. Someone fresh and thorough. He'd gotten one, and an investigator nothing like the one he'd hired after Lindsay's death. Now he'd have to deal with the result. Not when she died. It's hard not knowing if I ever did, but she mattered. She was my wife, and she mattered. I want to know who killed her. I want to know why. I spent too much of the last year defending myself and not enough really trying to find the answers.
Being the prime suspect in a murder tends to keep you on the hot seat. She cheated on you. Here you're trying to have a fair and civilized divorce with a lot of money and family rep at stake. Even with a prenup, a lot of money and goods at stake, and you find out she's been playing you for a fool? You go into the house, one your money paid for is hers, was still in trust when you purchased it. You confront her, lose your temper, pick up the poker, and let her have it. Then it's holy shit. Look what I did. You call the cops, covering it with the old, I came in and found her.
That's the way they saw it.
The police.
The police, Lindsay's parents, the media.
The parents don't matter. And the media, again, is what it is. And the cops couldn't in the end make the case.
The police couldn't, not definitively. But that doesn't make me innocent to them, or anyone else. Lindsay's parents? They lost a daughter, so they do matter. And they believe I got away with it. The media may be what it is, but it's weight. They made a pretty good case in the court of public opinion, and my family suffered for that. She studied him quietly as he spoke, and he realized now she'd gotten a sense of him, just as she'd gotten one of Bluff House. Are you trying to piss me off?
Maybe. Polite people don't tell you much of anything. Lindsay Landon's case looked slam dunk on the surface. Estranged husband, sex, betrayal, money, crime of passion. You're going to look at the husband first and the person who discovers the body. You were both. No sign of break-in, of struggle. No sign of burglary gone bad, the public fight with the victim earlier that day. A lot of weight.
I'm aware of the weight.
The problem is that's all there is. Surface. You go below and it falls apart. The timing's sticky. The time of death, the time you were seen by a number of witnesses leaving your office, the time you deactivated the alarm to come in. So you couldn't have gone in and out again, then back as you were seen at your office, had appointments, conversations, until after 6 p.m. And witnesses corroborate when the victim left the gallery where she worked. She entered the house, again verified, about 2 hours before you walked in the house that night.
The cops figured the timing was tight, but it was possible for me to go in, argue, kill her, then try to cover it before calling 911.
It didn't hold up well on reenactment. Even the prosecutor's reenactment. Good coffee,
she said in an aside, then